It's a wonderful Sunday morning. We have a wonderful drive here, driving through, meeting a lot of Amish, going to church, children and parents walking along the road. We live in a wonderful area, don't we? Don't we? That we have many God-fearing people that are interested in going to church Sunday morning. I enjoyed both devotions very much. Logan's thought that we, as we worship, that the walls in our lives can come down. I really appreciated that thought. I'd like to speak on something that happens every day, and that is close calls. Who had close calls in your life? We had a lot of people that had close calls. It's amazing that you're here this morning. Amazing that I'm here. But that's the title of the message, Close Calls. Close calls can be defined as something bad almost happened. You know, Mr. Trump, former president, he turned his head a millisecond before his ear was hit by a bullet. And it saved his life, seemingly. On 9/11, there was many close calls. The chef at Windows of the World, some of you probably there, I think we were there with the course, on top of one of the towers, and they have a restaurant. And it's called Windows of the World. And I can still picture that big, huge buildings. But the chef there, at the top of the, he wasn't there at the restaurant yet, but he normally would have been at work at 8:30, but down in the shopping concourse at the World Trade Center, he decided to buy a pair of glasses, and he survived. The other 72 of his co-workers were killed. There was another man, his name was Joseph Lott, and he survived because he put a green shirt on that morning, and he had a colleague. She had been on a trip and bought him a tie, and he sort of had a penchant for ties with some artwork. Anyway, she bought him this tie on her trip and gave it to him, and it was a red and white tie, and he said, "Well, I'm going to wear it while I speak," and she said, "Well, not with that shirt." So he turned around and went back to he was in the Marriott that's sandwiched between both towers. He went back to his room and ironed a white shirt and put that shirt on. He lived, she died. Because he chose to wear a green shirt when he was standing there in front. Our new bishop, James Martin, which it was a tremendous blessing too this morning to text a brand new bishop on his going to his first service. And I enjoyed that, to message a brand new bishop to his first service. Anyway, when I was at his place, and if you've been there, you know he has a lot of books, and I got two books, brought them home, and the one I started reading when I was there. And it's called Auschwitz. Now, I'm probably not saying it right. Eric Hellinger tried to tell me a few times, and I tried to copy him at the church picnic how to say Auschwitz, but I said, I give up. But he has it right, if you want to know how to say it. Eric Hellinger has it right. But it's a story of a Jewish doctor, Dr. Miklas. And he became a personal assistant to Dr. Joseph Mengele. But he was the angel of death. But, you know, he's the one that for tens of thousands of time would say left and right. The one way led to the crematorium and you'd be dead in a few hours. The other, you went to work. Well, at one row, he asked, "Well, any doctors?" And he pulled Dr. Miklas, and he was a very educated man and very educated in doing, the word would be, the word slips my mind, but it's basically when a person dies, you autopsy, dissecting. So he worked with him because he was very learned in that, and it saved his life. But there was many close calls, left, right, 3,000 people a day. Daily there would be 40 cattle cars that would roll in, and some were selected to live, others were selected to die. By simply what would seem almost like just random fate. Just a few things to get your mind thinking about close calls. Is there close calls in Scripture? There are. Let's turn to a few of them. Judges 9, verses 4 and 5. There is a lone survivor. We know the name Abimelech. And he chose to kill all his brethren. And Judges 9, 4 and 5. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Barabbath, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons which followed him. And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone, notwithstanding, yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And these, as I understand it, these were Gideon's son. Think about it. All his brother, all 70, were killed. But he survived. We would call that a close call, wouldn't we? In 1 Samuel 18, we have another event that would fit into a close call. 1 Samuel 18:11. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. Twice this happened. Imagine being in a room and somebody tried to throw something at it and it stuck in the wall. I guess, we'll touch on that some things later. But another one would be in New Testament and the story of Paul's shipwreck. It mentions there how, of course, the boat broke up completely. And Acts 27, verse 44. And the rest, some on board, some in broken pieces of the ship, and so it came to pass, they all escaped, all safe. No, they escaped all safe to land. This was a close call. And turning back to Acts 14, verse 19 and 20. It's Apostle Paul, and there came thither certain Jews of Antioch and Iconium who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. Howbeit, as the disciples stood round about him, he rose up and came into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. This very close call. They thought he was dead. As I thought about this, he got up. And I think instead of Apostle Paul saying, fight, fight, he said, preach, preach. And that's what he did. He got up and he started traveling and he went on preaching. Well, that's a couple Bible examples. And my question for you this morning is, was it luck? Was it fate? Was Jotham's hiding skills so much better than his brothers, and he was maybe a little smaller, and he found a place that nobody thought of, and he was saved? Was it David's alertness, that he was just a good eye and could move fast, and somebody a little slower wouldn't have made it? Or is it an unseen hand of providence? Did Apostle Paul do a better job of protecting himself somehow, put his hands over his head better, and somehow he had better protection, and then Stephen ended up dying from being stoned? You know, Paul survives a stoning, and Stephen dies from stoning. I've been just thinking about some of these things. We've been thinking about close calls physically. But maybe close calls physically aren't as significant as we think. Let's think about spiritual close calls. Do we make a bigger deal over physical close calls than spiritual close calls? Perhaps we have a close call spiritually and we don't even realize it. Satan's dart almost gets through that shield of faith, and we're not even thinking about it. Or it's almost, we didn't have our shield of faith on very well, and it almost took us. Somehow we need to get through our thick skulls that spiritual close calls are much more significant and more dangerous than physical close calls. Let's turn to, that's the second point of the message, is spiritual close calls. Let's turn to Acts 24:25. Acts 24, verse 25. We'll start with verse 24. And after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewish, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. And he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come. Felix trembled and answered, "Go thy way. For this time, when I have a convenient season, I will call for thee." Let's turn over to Acts 26, verse 28. Another close call, 26:28. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." I would say that these two men had a close call with truth. A close call with truth. That is better than not having a close call with truth, but there's a sense they both rejected or delayed, and it is not good with them at all today if they never did make that choice. They were given that opportunity to choose Christ, and they delayed it. Our spiritual close calls, I believe, are also today, I think, are close calls with the world. Thinking of this, that a close call of falling away, of being attracted to the world. You know, we can have physical close calls, and they can shake us up. Wow, can't believe this. You know, there's a few months ago that I observed this. You know, when I was coming down through here and I was approaching Spring Valley Road, and I saw this pickup to my right. Indeed, he pulled right out in front. And I was glad that I could just shoot into Spring Valley Road, and we contacted a little bit on that road. But he looked at me, and it was a close call. I would have nailed him in his door, I think. But you could see how he was shook up. More shook up than I was. I was, hey, this all worked out great. We can be on our way. But I went on my way. But he said, "I never saw you. I never saw you." But you see, we should have a little more, get a little more shook up about spiritual close calls. And I think there's too many close calls and too many spiritual fatalities. And we need to recognize that we're in a serious battle, and there's close calls. Let's turn to Revelation just to illustrate that the church is in Revelation. We're facing many of the same things that they faced, and we're having close calls and fatalities just as they have. Revelation chapter 3, verse 1 through 5, Revelation 3. And unto the angel of the church of Sardis write, these things saith he that hath the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know thy works, that thou hast the name, that thou livest and art dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain, that are ready to die. For I have not found thy works perfect before God. Remember, therefore, how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come on thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come unto thee. Thou hast a few names, even in Sardis, which have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He that overcometh the same shall be clothed in white raiment. I will not blot out his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. You know, it's a great contradiction, you know, to be very stressed out and concerned about physical close calls, but being passive and indifferent about the spiritual ones. It's a little like, being very conscientious about wearing a seatbelt in our cars. That's a good thing. But then ignoring being conscientious about spiritual things that the Bible tells us to be. And there's many things here that, to be that pure person and to be that person that's living in victory. And it's a close call when we're tempted to give in to lust, the second look, or another click, or almost just letting a person have it. Thirdly, we'd like to think about what close calls should do. What should close calls do for us? First of all, they should wake us up to the frailty of life. Think about it, that arbitrary decisions can make a difference of life or death. Take this road, and one has an accident, dies. Or stop for coffee. One time it saves our life, and the next time it takes our life. There was a man that was to be, had a ticket to go on one of those 9/11 planes, and the travel agent misprinted the time on his itinerary, and he arrived late to get on that plane. But it saved his life. We need to realize that there is but a step between me and death, and that life on earth is fragile. And we cannot think that if we're smart and we're careful, that we can escape brushes of death. That's not thinking right. there's something about life that's a leveler. It really is. So these close calls that we get, and many of you raised your hand, we should think about the frailty of life. That life is, we don't know if we have tomorrow. And there's just a step between us and death. And secondly, it should remind us that our life and death is in God's hands. You know, Stephen died from stoning. Paul had a close brush. He just may have had, you know, one more stone may have taken him out, but it was just a close brush with death. Paul's earthly journey was not completed. I think about my father at times. He had a close brush with death. His hair was singed. His skin was starting to melt from the heat of that vehicle. But there was, you know, spiritual angels and physical angels that saved his life. And there's a lot of things that we don't completely understand in life. But somehow, at the end of the day, we need to embrace the thought that life and death are in God's hands. And if we get away from that, it's going to be very troubling. Thirdly, it should make us think about priorities. When we have close calls, it should make us think about priorities. You know, we need to stop and think, what is important in life? You know, maybe we're in that crazy cycle and we're just doing a lot of urgent things. Maybe all those urgent things are not important. You know, Stephen, when he lay dead there, it was really not that important that he had got his grass mowed that morning and got his chariot washed. Was it important? It wasn't. It wasn't important at all. It may have seemed urgent to him to quick do those things before he heads out, but it was not important. You know what was important that morning when he got up? The most important thing for Stephen, he was one of the seven deacons, first one to get stoned, I guess, was to be right with God. That was the most important thing that morning, or that evening, was to be right with God. And fourthly, thinking about close calls and what they should do for us, is we should review our relationships. We really should. We really should. It's not a bad thing for us to envision ourselves in a coffin. It's not a bad thing to envision that. Think about who will be there. Think about our family. Think about what our family will think. I think Jeff Jarman had a friend that he had his casket all ready and up in the garage, all ready to go. Wouldn't that be convenient? That would maybe be a gift, that my casket somewhere, all I have to do is crank it and let it down, there it is, you're all ready. Save some time for the family. Well, we need to think about relationships and think about what's important in life. What will people think? Well, of course, it's most important what God thinks. But we need to realize that the most important thing in life is relationships, not things and our possessions and what we have and the fabric and the campers and the beautiful kitchens and houses and the redone stuff. It's really not that important. the end of the day, relationships with God and people are very important. In fact, we'll lose our way if we don't have right relationships. Well, in conclusion, not a long message. Most important is that you receive a little something that you remember, is that life on earth can leave us with questions. You know, after reading that book called Auschwitz, there's things that I hardly know what to do with. I knew some of these things, but this doctor saw everything. He saw everything. Not many people saw everything. I mean, he could see the 3,000 bodies on a pall. He is one that one time the of course they had what they called the Jewish people called Sonderkommandos. Sonderkommandos were, they would pick out husky men, boys, whatever. They had about 200 of them, and they would do this ugly work of after the gas chamber, and you would have 3,000 people, and because the gas would go to the bottom, it made a pile of people because everyone wanted to get higher. It was a terrible, terrible thing. But this happened daily. 3,000 people, but these Jewish slaves, prisoners, would have to go in there with hoses, wash people down, load them up in cars, take them over there. And something happened that probably only happened one time. And these men came into his dissecting room. He had sort of a almost like a surgery center there, which all he did was, took people apart. But they had a girl at the bottom of the pile that was still living, and they had no idea what to do. Of course, they brought her in, and he actually gave her shots, and she survived. And he actually was able to give her some food, and she could talk and say where she was from. An amazing, amazing thing. But of course, she couldn't live either. She died by a bullet because, of course, nobody could leave there. Now, even all those 200 men, when this doctor came, they were on their 12th set of what they called the Sonderkommando. Every 3 months, they would take all those fellows, 200 of them, shoot them, get rid of them, get a fresh batch in. And when he came in, they were on their 12th set. I could tell you a lot of other things that probably won't be helpful for you, but I think everyone should know some of that history. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to decide. I wonder what happened to him, this doctor. That did all this. And you know what? He died a natural death in South America. He worked as a farm laborer for 5 years, and when things got a little tight, and maybe suspicious, he went to one country and went to another. Anyway, he died swimming from a stroke. And they took up his grave and did that work to, I'm not sure how, somehow they got on his trail, but I think that was maybe even in the 60s. There is things that in life that I don't understand. That whole thing is hard to understand. There's a 16th century cargoman that said, John Bradford, he coined the phrase, "There but for the grace of God go I. There but for the grace of God I go I." And what, in the midst of what seems like randomness in our daily existence, we need to embrace the fact that God is in control. We just have to believe that He is in control of both the close calls and we could call the dead center calls. Sometimes it's dead center. Sometimes it's just a very close call. And there's a lot in life that doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. Some of you know, I had a brother that was killed by a gunshot wound. I guess he's dead because he didn't turn. If he would have turned a little bit, it may have not tipped his heart. It nipped his heart. Came in, one, and just came in the back, across the corner, and he didn't die instantly. But that nipping the heart was impossible to survive. So again, there's pieces of life that does not make sense, and I can't put it together. But we need to conclude that God does make sense. And we embrace faith in God, and that He is a God. And that's one of the struggles I can see, where people have seen all the horrible things. And someone does all those horrible things to millions of people and destroys so many families, so many. And he ends his life as a normal person. Well, we put that all in God's hands. God is a good God. He's a merciful God. And we need to say, continue to embrace that. So with that, we can say whether a bad thing happened or whether it almost happened, we still need to conclude that we serve a loving and kind God. That's the bottom line. And if we don't come to that, it will not be good for us today, tomorrow, or forever. So God bless us as we live our lives, continue to believe in the sovereign God, that He is a good God, that He is a merciful God, and we don't understand a lot of things in life, but we put it in His hands. And that may be a process of time, putting things in God's hands. Coming back, so I have a few moments here, that story of that doctor, Jewish doctor, very educated. And he actually spent many hours with this butcher, this angel of death, in this basically a hospital room where he would do autopsies on people. Of course, this doctor had back then they would take twins. He would need to examine twins when they were alive and do all kinds of, you know, physical and spend time with them. Of course, not say what's going to happen. But then later on, he'd have their warm bodies and have to do a dissect. And you know, it was terrible things. But he did survive. He did survive at the end of World War II. Of course, when things were closing in 1945, he was forced to walk. They emptied those camps. Kept on going further and further in Germany. Of course, if you couldn't walk, you had a bullet head, so you would lose on a walk. You might have 1,000 people less than when you began. But it seemed rather miraculous that when he got back to his home where he was. And one day, there was a knock on the door. And it was his wife and daughter. And they reunited. And they said a few things. And then the mother and daughter just broke down and cried for hours and hours. Terrible existence. Well, we have brethren and sisters in this country. And the life that we live is many, many people have not experienced anything close to what we're experiencing. My conclusion is, let's live for God. If we need to die for God, that's okay too. Then we go home to be with God forever. God bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.